1963, and four young lads from Liverpool are about to change the world. No, not them. And they weren't from Liverpool, nor were there four of them. But the story did start in 1963. It's the tale of a group of kids with guile and confidence, and a record that became a cult classic.
An original copy of Making Love sold on eBay for around $6,500.
Babe, do you feel it?
It's the story of men who decided to relive their teenage dreams.
My name is Jeb Riskin, and I am a former member of the Slaws, one of the founding members.
There was a song.
We wrote it while we were in the recording studio. We didn't even have a concept before we walked in the door.
And there was a record.
We went banging on doors of local radio stations and saying, play our record.
Thousands of records got recorded, most of them in very small pressings, didn't get any, even played on the radio, and disappeared without a trace until collectors started digging them up in the 70s and 80s.
And there was a scene. Mike Stax has become the go-to expert on the 60s garage band movement.
I find myself digging into the music from the 60s, you know, and I got really into the Stones, and from there kind of started digging deeper, Yardbirds, Pretty Things. Then you start digging into the American bands from that era too and find that there's just hundreds of them. It's not really discussed what a huge wave of creativity that was.
Jeff Briskin and Mike Rummons were attracted to the sounds of the British Invasion, not just the...
You know, I never liked the Beatles, but I did like the Rolling Stones. I did like the Kinks.
The funny thing is, we didn't think of it ourselves as garage bands. What kind of kicked off this whole thing was the British Invasion. Because up until then, it was all surf music. Bobby Rydell and Shelley Fabre and stuff like that. These bands came along, like even the Rolling Stones, the early Rolling Stones, they were kind of raw. And a lot of these bands were raw. And we thought, well, we could do that, you know? I mean, they're just playing blues, you know? How hard is that?
There was more bands formed in the wake of the Beatles being on Ed Sullivan than, you know, than was formed in the wake of the Ramones and the Sex Pistols.
God bless the Beatles. They changed all of our lives.
Tom McLaughlin was in the Maywines with Jeff Briskin and is the current frontman for the Sloths.
Most of us turned 13, became teenagers as the Beatles hit. You want to figure out how you're going to score with women. The longer hair obviously is working for the English rock groups. Those of us that did have long hair sort of were like, you know, the outcasts. Out of that came that love of wanting to get up and do what our heroes were doing.
There was bands practically, you know, every few blocks of America, teenage people wanting to make their own music or cover the songs that were on the radio.
Jeff Briskin explains how the Sloths came into being.
In 1963, I started doing surfing. I would say a vast majority of the surfers played surf music. It's kind of a cultural thing. And in 1963, Mike got a St. George guitar. He comes over to my house, we sat on the floor, we're kind of learning how to play Pipeline and stuff like that. You know, that's what we were doing.
Michael Rummons takes up the story.
Jeff was a schoolmate of mine. We both went to Beverly Hills High School. I had just been playing guitar for a short amount of time. He was already more accomplished. Accomplishing me more advanced.
As their abilities improved, Jeff and Mike decided to take the next step.
At some point we decided we need to make a real band. There were several other bands at our school. Some of them were playing at the proms and the school dances. We wanted to do that too. We started asking around.
Jeff found a bass player.
In the beginning of the year, surfaces my good buddy Steve Dibner. Steve saw me and Mike ring around with the guitars. He wanted to be part of it. Steve decided that he'd be a bass player, and Steve played piano.
Beverly Hills High School was not short of talented students.
I met Ella Fitzgerald's son, Ray Brown Jr. He started to play drums, and we started this band, and it was called The Moving Violations. We were playing like surf music. We were playing basic, you know, vocals like Louie Louie, you know, stuff very simple.
Mike was doing most of the vocal duties. They wanted a frontman. And Hank Daniels Jr. was transferred to the school at just the right moment.
Hank started coming to the school. At the time, he looked really different from everybody else. Beverly Hills High School at that time was preppy, varsity, sports. Those were the guys who were popular. So Hank shows up. He's coming to school barefoot, and he brings his 12-string acoustic Gibson guitar strapped across his back like Bob Dylan.
He looks like a beatnik. You don't take your shoes off at high school and walk around barefoot, but he would do that. And we all said, this is our front man. We need like a Mick Jagger.
We thought he was cool. So we asked him if he wanted to be in the band, be the lead singer. And he said yes.
Ella Fitzgerald decided that her son should not be with us.
Ray Brown Jr. went on to have a successful jazz career.
We needed a drummer, and so at Beverly Hills High School, you got the Surfers hanging out with the guys in music. So they're hanging out together, and that's kind of how we met Sam Camras. Sam's on the grass having lunch, and he says, hey, I play the drums. So that's where Sam came from. He comes in.
The band agreed to make a name change. Mike was inspired by a caption from a 19th century political cartoon, which the band embraced.
In the beginning of 65, we played our first gig as the Sloths.
Our first gig, I think, was at the Cafe Four Oaks. It might even still be there. Steve McQueen was in the audience, and he liked the band.
We started venturing up on a strip. I think we played a few early gigs at Pandora's Box.
Played at the Battle of Bands at the Teenage Fair.
Played the Hollywood Palladium.
Stratford on Sunset, which is currently the House of Blues.
Noel Kahn would later replace Jeth as the Sloths' guitarist.
We were the house band at this place called Stratford. It was about like four blocks down from the sea, which it was like a Rocky and Bullwinkle statue, right? Like half a block from there. As far as playing in the club, there was no rules, I guess. You know, we played at all these clubs and they were all served alcohol.
The Sea Witch never had a stage. You know, bands were just set up on the floor. I saw the Doors at the Sea Witch. I walked in there one night on a Tuesday night and there was nobody knew who they were. They hadn't been signed yet by Elektra. I thought, wow, this guy's kind of weird. That was my first impression of the Doors.
Jeff Briskin explains the Sloths' next move.
We felt that since we were starting to sound like the British bands, that maybe we can go get a recording contract, because I think we were different than the majority of kids in bands at that time. We were.
But our other goal was to make a record. We wanted to be on the radio.
We loaded my station wagon full of gear.
We literally just started cold calling people and banging on doors and saying, hey, we got a band. We want to record. Do you want to hear us?
They would say, hey, get lost, right? Second or third place we went up to was Sunset Studios. Al and Sonny Jones were the owners of Impression Records.
And they had us come in and set up, and they said, okay, we want to record you. Yeah, we want to release your record, and you guys are going to be a big hit. So we thought we were on our way.
We played that old classic Summertime. They didn't really like that very much. So we started working on Making Love. It kind of came from the Mona, Bo Diddley kind of a sound. We liked it. And they liked it. We wrote it while we were in the recording studio. We didn't even have a concept before we walked in the door. Only one
thing I want to do. We went banging on doors of local radio stations and saying, play our record. And we had our friends call up and request it. Hey, Making Love to You. The A side never got played on the radio because Making Love was too controversial. I mean, you have to remember, this is when Mick Jagger had to sing Let's Spend Some Time Together on TV. He couldn't sing Let's Spend the Night Together. They didn't play Making Love. They played You Mean Everything. That was my first record, and that was my first airplay ever.
Right after that time at studio, we were approached by a manager named Lou Pecker, and he's connected. And so he says, can I be your manager? We didn't have one. I said, well, we just signed this contract. He says, well, let me do this. I'm going to have my business lawyer come over there and look at this contract. The lawyer starts laughing. He goes, you can't sign a contract. And we started playing substantial clubs at that point.
You know, I look back on it, it's amazing we were able to accomplish that. It was just a youthful enthusiasm and ignorance combined.
Were the Sloths being paid?
I don't know. I think we were, but I never saw any money. You never see any money in bands.
Pressure of playing clubs five nights a week proved too much for Jeff.
I was in high school. I was out late. I was coming home 1 or 2 in the morning on school nights. By January of 66, my parents said, you got to go to college pretty soon. You can't be doing this. So in January or around in there, I quit.
Noel Kahn, formerly known as Don Silverman, stepped up.
Then this friend of mine, somehow or other, he got in the Sloths, and that's what got me connected.
Steve also left, the bass player, and I was replaced by Don Silverman to maybe June of 66, because Mike joined the Yellow Pages then, and the band disbanded.
Michael Rummins explains why the Sloths broke up in 1966.
The biggest factor was the crackdown on the Sunset Strip scene. The merchants didn't see any value in having all these kids hanging out there. Their fear was they were going to drive away the regular customers. They put pressure on the authorities to get rid of these hippies.
Jeff Briskin was over 18, so not subject to the curfew law.
And there was these old statutes out there that had anybody under 18 cannot be out past 10 o'clock. There was a former intersection that does not exist today where Crescent Heights met Sunset. In the middle of the intersection was this little island. Now, on that island sat Pandora's Box, and that was like a meeting place for all the rebellious kids on the strip.
Cops started coming down checking people's ID, arresting people for curfew violation. I think I went to jail 4 or 5 times for curfew violation. I was like a month away from 18. My dad came down and started yelling at the cops. You're gonna draft him and send him to Vietnam and risk his life for his country, but you're gonna arrest him a month earlier.
A crackdown led to the infamous riots on the Strip in 1966. But a greater threat to life, liberty, and freedom loomed large.
Jeff got to the military. I didn't pass the exam. That was a life-changing moment for me. If they would have said yes, they would have stamped me and I would have been on the bus. And instead, you know, they rejected me and, here I am.
Mike played in a number of bands after this, and in the 70s returned to college to study music and remained in the music business. Steve Dibner became a university professor. Jeff never saw Vietnam and had a successful career as a lawyer. He would not play guitar again for decades to come, nor, a student of Eastern music and culture, travel between San Francisco, Pakistan and Afghanistan. Tom studied mime with Marcel Marceau in France and became a successful movie director. Sam Camras passed away in 1996. He was followed in 2009 by Hank Daniels Jr., just 2 years before the Sloths were reborn. Tommy McLaughlin recalls how the Sloths came back from the grave.
The Sloths came about with a phone call from one of my agents saying that there was a lawyer looking for me, and said it was a guy named Jeff Briskin.
So I think it was around late 2010, early 2011, I decided to open up a MySpace page, and I just thought, okay, I'm gonna put down every band I ever played with here. Much to my surprise, this guy named Mike Sachs gets in touch with me and says, you were in the Sloths? Tell me about the Sloths.
I've been looking for the Sloths for some time, and one of my friends happened to find Mike Rumman, so I contacted him about doing a story in Ugly Things, and he said, I'll try to contact some of the other band members. So he found Jeff Briskin, and then Jeff really went to town, and I think he got like a private investigator, and he started tracking down everybody.
So within a day or two of February 9th, 2011, I got an email from Mike Stacks. I think at some point within a week or so, we actually spoke on the phone. How could you not know that your record became this like cult classic all over the world? It only had his Hank Daniels name on there.
The packaging of the Sloths' Making Love contained little information about the band. Michael Rummins.
Because we didn't know what we were doing, we just put the Sloths Making Love in our picture. So nobody knew who we were. Serendipitously, it turned out to be a good thing because it kind of added to the mystery. Who are these guys, you know?
What originally had started off as, you know, oh great, I've got an interview with Michael Rummins of the Sloths, it became, okay, now I'm going to meet with, three or four of these people all at the same time. And at that point, it was after the interviews that they decided that they would get back together because, you know, in many cases, they hadn't seen each other in over 30 years.
We got together everybody who was still alive, who were both either part of the Maywines or the Sloths, and we'd not seen each other in 45 years. So that was a trip. Out of that came a sort of, why don't we play together, just see what that's like.
Jeff contacted me. I didn't know this, but Jeff had been rehearsing, you know, with Tom. It might have been Mike Stacks who said, why didn't you guys just reform the Sloths? Our frontman, our lead singer, passed away. How can we reform the Sloths? And he goes, well, Tom wants to do it. Tom was the frontman for the Maywines, who Jeff and Don Silverman had both played in after the Sloths.
It's kind of amazing how that happened. But they still sort of had the spark, I suppose. You know, they still got along with each other. They had the urge to make music.
We took a job in San Diego. Mike Stacks booked us with his band down there, the Loons. And we played at Club 11, not expecting much, and had pretty incredible reaction.
Jeff Briskin found himself reliving the teenage rock and roll dream in its entirety.
These clubs don't even open up to 10 o'clock at night half the time, you know. And so we go on a feature band, and there's a lot of curiosity about this loss, so we go on at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, or whatever. But we played all over the place. I played, numerous venues, some of them multiple times, from the Echo to Los Globos to the Hollywood Bar and Grill to the Roxy.
In 2 years, we did like over 60 shows, and we've done well over 70 now.
San Francisco-based Noor Khan was included in the Sloths' new life.
Then they came up here about a year and a half ago, and they played, and I went and played with them at this club, did a couple songs. The Ponderosa Stomp brought me over there, so I played with them at the Ponderosa Stomp. And then in February, they were here for 4 nights, and I played every night with them.
Mike Stacks ponders the future of garage band music.
You know, there's a band from Orange County called the Newmans, sort of, you know, 1966 authentic garage band. These guys are in their early 20s.
Sloss, I don't know. I don't know what's the story for them. I have no idea what's going to happen with Sloss. I have no idea. If I had a crystal ball, I would certainly be a very wealthy individual. There's a tremendous interest in Latino band. Latino culture, for some reason, loves this garage stuff. And not only do they like the old garage music, they like their own bands. So we see a lot of bands that are formed, like the Shagrats.
Does Michael Ruman see the Sloths going on forever?
I think I'm going to keep this going indefinitely because it was the first band I ever formed. It was the first band I was ever in. I can do everything I want to do in this band. We've recorded, we've played major festivals, we've gone to Europe. I never went to Europe before in any of the bands I was in. Got a little bit of radio airplay. The only thing I haven't done in this band that I'd like to do is make some money. You know, everybody wants you to work for free. People are making movies for free and putting them out there hoping something happens to them. If you're an artist, what you want to do is realize these artistic visions you have. You know, let the world decide. My other goal is to try to live another 40 years and see if any of this stuff today ends up on eBay.
Take it long, baby. I feel so good. Ain't never gonna stop. When you come into my arms, and you feel my hugging, and you feel my kissing, then baby, you're gonna know just how much you've been missing.